This is the January 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online on demand anytime you'd like to listen at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Let's start, as we usually do, by getting a list of topics we should discuss for the day. I think, Chuck Shelby, we'll start with you. What's on top of your mind?
Well, we've seen a rally in the corn and wheat market start the new year out, which is kind of encouraging, and the bean market is kind of headed the other way. So weather in South America is something we will probably want to touch on as we move forward with this discussion today.
And Dan Zwicker?
How about why we don't have a Secretary of Agriculture appointment yet?
Okay. And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, how will the interest rates that they're talking about affect us for the rest of the year?
And let's start there, Wayne. So how will the interest rates affect us? What do you think will happen with the Federal Reserve?
Well, you know, we had some talk about maybe going to 3 interest rate raises for this coming year, and a lot of them speaking lately, and yet we turned around today and saw the dollar down a point and a quarter. So just sort of a different sort of feel to that, but I do think if they do continue to raise that, it's going to keep our dollar strong, and it's going to be hard to rally the grains.
And will this have an impact on the export market, or do they?
Well, I think when it comes down to when Brazil has a supply to sell, I think it could end up doing a little bit that way and seeing a little more of the bean sales come out of South America rather than out of the U.S.
Chuck, you mentioned that you want to talk about weather in South America. It has been variable in Argentina, but pretty good in Brazil. What do you know about the crops there?
Well, it looks like we've got a decent crop coming along. I think the thing I wonder about, though, I mean, we tend to build that crop up as always going to be the biggest ever. So is it like last year? Is it a good crop and maybe a little bit disappointing on the fill? In Argentina, we've seen areas that were really dry but have gone to excessive moisture. So I think it's a good crop out of the South America area, but I'm just not sure yet or confident enough to say it's a really great crop.
Dan Zwicker, can you fill us in on where you think we are at this point with the tech side of the market for soybeans?
I think everything points up the way I'm reading the charts. Soybeans did have a corrective decline during the month of December. And then yesterday we went underneath the December low and we closed sharply higher. Now today we're off a few pennies, but we'll have to see, I guess, how we finish out the week on Friday. But barring anything bearish, my guess is that the upside that was demonstrated on Wednesday will follow through. And we will close out the week with a weekly reversal to the upside. And I think that really lays the groundwork for a monthly reversal during the month of January. And that indicates to me that demand is going to probably be a lot stronger than what everybody thinks. And or there's going to be a weather issue somewhere down the road to support soybean prices. As far as corn goes, it stays in its sideways to higher climb. Cash corn, Central Illinois, making new highs for the past 6 months. So I think it's technically in good position. And the wheat market is wanting to break out of its sideways trading range. So I think we're starting off the year on pretty solid technical footing.
And do your long-term analysis show that this should be a year where we would be moving higher?
That is my opinion. And, of course, you can probably, every person that kind of reads market cycles could probably give you a little different opinion. But it does look to me like all 3 commodities are in position for 17 to be at least have some better selling opportunities ahead of us than probably what we've seen over the past, let's say, 6 months or so.
Wayne Nelson, what are producers telling you about their intentions as it comes to this growing season?
Well, everybody we talked to seems to be at least favoring some bean acres being switched from corn. And I think that that varies depending on the individual, anywhere from leaving it where it was at. The guys that were maybe 60-40 corn are thinking more of a 50-50 rotation. And the guys that were 50-50 are maybe thinking 60-40. We're emphasizing that when they can get around $10, that it's probably a good idea to take that extra acres they're switching over and, you know, lock in so there is a profit above where the corn was and why they were switching to begin with.
Chuck Shelby, your view on old crop sales for soybeans?
Well, I think if we get this rally back, we've seen some opportunities above $10 and get back into the 10-20 to 10-40 range. It's a place to let some more of those go. And as we go forward, again, it's going to be a lot of weather and other things that, you know, maybe a little bit of re-ownership is something that the guys look at if they need something to give them confidence to let those beans go.
Two things, Chuck. Farmers harvested an awfully good crop, both soybeans and corn, bigger than they had expected in many places, though the further east you go, the less likely that is to have happened, especially in parts of Indiana and Ohio along the border. And then also in that same vein, they have this larger crop. They feel, I think, a little more comfortable with their finances. Will they really shift acreage, do you think, to soybeans in the coming season?
It seems to be kind of the general trend, but where we see more acres, cotton is a price that's attracting acres in the south. I think that's going to suck some away from the corn. And when you look into the western guys who don't have, you know, maybe quite as good a basis on corn, I think the switch is going to come maybe more from the fringe areas and say from Ohio through through Illinois to Iowa area as far as what guys are really going to make a big difference is moving away from corn.
And so we are a long way away from that at this point still. Let's turn our attention to something a bit closer at hand. Next week, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the final crop production report figures of the year. Chuck, do you expect any changes based off what producers were telling them in the month of December? This is one that's based largely off final surveys from producers.
I don't really think so. I think the yield number is up to the upper end as far as a pretty big yield. I think what we're really looking for is to see if we get some bigger demand numbers as we've seen some of those really good exports, really good usage in ethanol. So that's the change we're looking for as far as making a difference, maybe giving something positive is bigger demand.
How is demand holding up, Wayne, for both corn and soybeans on the export market?
Well, the export market is starting to tail back just a little bit here as we go. It generally does tail back this time of year. And, of course, we saw an awful lot of front-loading by China. Still some very aggressive sales. You know, we look for the sales announcement that comes out tomorrow morning to be good again this week on beans. I think over a million metric tons. So, I mean, it does look good. I think that we're proceeding along. You know, it's going to be, I think the bean market's going to be more on what the weather is in South America over the next 6 weeks to see if they get that last little bit planted and also to see how much acreage they get cut back. You know, they did cut back some of the acreage on the Rosario Exchange that they were talking about. The Buenos Aires Exchange cut back their planted estimate by 300,000 hectares to 19.3 million. So that helped support the beans a little bit yesterday also.
Corey Melby, who is a Brazilian ag consultant, a farmer from Minnesota, spends his winter months, or summer months in this case, in Brazil. Talked to us on the closing market report Thursday afternoon. It's up on the website at willag.org. Told us that the early harvest in Mato Grosso of 90-day soybeans was going pretty well and far better than expected, exceeding anything that they had done historically by It seemed to me by about 20%. I think that's roughly the number you probably could calculate out. This was a very good harvest to begin with, although it's a long ways until we get to the rest of that harvest, Chuck. Are you concerned at all that that, along with the 480 million bushel carryout that the United States has on its books today, will cause problems for producers in the near future?
Well, when you look at the fundamental numbers, and I would go back in history and look at that 480 number, Todd. Historically, in the last 7 or 8 years, USDA has always overstated that and underestimated demand. I think the market has been so honed in and focused in on these good crops we have had in the United States and South America, but we tend to, you know, kind of just not pay that much attention. Or it's you know, we have a great demand, and that is increasing every year. So I think it's a lid on prices, but I think the market showed us, even in the face of a big crop in the United States and a big crop probably coming, we're still at the $10 bean level. So if we built enough demand in here to support $10 beans, give or take, whereas a year or so ago we were at $9 level. So it's concerning, but I think, again, the demand has showed us, I think $10 beans, give or take, is a number we can kind of see going into 17.
Hey, Dan Zwicker, have you changed the way you think? And I know you mostly do a lot of technical looking at the marketplace, but on the fundamental side, about the soybeans as it relates to where that supply is developed, half of it in the northern hemisphere and half of it in the southern hemisphere, roughly speaking. This has changed, I think, the fundamental power of the marketplace in the United States. Do we need to concentrate more on WASDE's world production numbers than we do when we consider what's happening in the marketplace as it pertains to the price of beans?
Well, there's no doubt we're in a world market, and you know, currency values and everything has a lot to do with who gets their inventory sold and who doesn't get their inventory sold. But I think the way President-elect Donald Trump has bully pulpit the automobile manufacturers about producing cars in Mexico and planning on bringing them in here to the United States. We've seen some change in attitude in corporations on that. And I have a sneaky feeling that China, which we have a $500 million deficit or on goods. I think China may want to buy more inventory from the United States to try to help close that trade deficit gap. So that may happen with Japan. That may happen with Mexico. So I have a sneaky feeling that maybe the way Trump is approaching international trade, that a lot of these countries, world buyers, may end up buying more inventory out of the United States than what everybody thinks, just to try to close some of those trade deficit gaps to avoid any confrontation with the new president and his trade policies and the way, you know, he wants to renegotiate NAFTA. And of course, if there's any other new agreements that come forward, he's definitely going to want U.S. to at least be treated fairly where he doesn't believe the U.S. is being treated fairly in the world marketplace right now. So I'm kind of in the opinion that maybe these demand numbers for both corn, soybeans, and even wheat may end up being a little better than what everybody thinks. Even though world supplies are large, it's the idea that we need to even some of these trade deficits that's been happening over the past several years.
So China would be one place where we might see this happen, as I'm thinking about which nations actually control their imports. So China would be one. I don't know that the rest of them, I suppose they might be able to put pressure on some of their companies to purchase higher amounts of agricultural goods from the United States to offset their trade deficits or trade surpluses into this nation. Where else do you think we might find?
Well, China is definitely the big one, and China may end up buying more North American inventory and stay away from South American inventory. Maybe South America inventory ends up with holding the world carryover, whereas in years past, the U.S. has always had the world carryover, and all the other countries undercut us and sold inventory. Mexico, you can already see Mexico's hollering that Trump is stealing their jobs with the couple announcements by Ford. Moving, they're not expanding in Mexico, and instead going to build some cars, more cars in the United States. They're already hollering that Trump is stealing jobs out of Mexico. So I think this trade could get interesting. Mexico is a large buyer of U.S. inventory. They may push the needle to buy more inventory from the U.S. to close their gap. Because that's what Trump's looking at, is that he's in favor of trade, but he doesn't want everybody to take advantage of us like they have over the past several years. So I think these countries may take a look at trying to narrow that trade deficit, and that could be beneficial. Mexico's a big buyer of corn. They may be a bigger buyer of corn. And that same way with China, may end up buying more beans from the United States than normally they would, at the expense of South America. So I don't know if that's the beginnings of a trade war or what, but I do think we're starting to, we got a different player in Washington right now, and that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, it's an interesting thought, and I don't know whether Wayne or Chuck, either of you, would have a thought on this, on the idea that these nations, some of them anyway, that have the ability to purchase grain nationally might try to mitigate their trade surplus to the United States by purchasing more agricultural goods. It doesn't resolve some of the jobs problems that Donald Trump would be considering, but I suppose it does change the numbers, at least. And I don't know. What do you think?
Well, we would hope that that's the answer, but I'm afraid the answer more so is, as he gets tough bargaining, China generally likes to throw up roadblocks and say, we're going to buy more from South America if you want to treat us this way and everything else. And of course, that's the other side of the coin. I sure hope Dan's side of the coin is the one that when it's flipped, it comes down and ends that way. And I do think we're going to get some better trade deals out of everything along the way, because Donald Trump is more of a businessman than what we've seen in the presidency for quite a while.
All right, so that's all kind of speculation. I don't know, Chuck, whether you want to jump in this
or
not.
The only thing I would throw in, Todd, is these are cheap prices, so it's a lot easier to buy, you know, quantities here at cheap prices than it is at higher prices. So I think that's another factor that can enter in here when you look at these countries. And if we go forward, we've been in these low price ranges for several years. So going forward, it's kind of like crude oil. I mean, you know, crude oil, we have a big supply of crude oil, but we've seen a decent rally there. So I think it's an easy maneuver for countries that need grain to go ahead and make these purchases and maybe get some side benefit from the trade aspect too.
Oh, I like it. I think you guys may be on the right track here, at least on the short term. It'll be interesting to see how all that plays out here in the next 6 to 12 months. Dan, you wanted to talk about the Secretary of Agriculture since we've been discussing the president-elect. He has been working through a list more than once, a couple of times. Sonny Perdue's been up, Republican former governor of Georgia, Maldonado out of California, Kip Thom from Indiana is on the list on this Thursday afternoon, or at least visiting with Donald Trump in Trump Towers. What do you want to discuss about the Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the old saying goes, the people that talk about it don't know anything, and the people that know aren't talking about it. So, but, it's just a kind of an observation. I think if you look at who he's picked so far, there's some people that may raise the question that the cabinet's not diverse enough, and he's looking to add some more diversity to his cabinet. And that could be where he's hung up, because everybody's been selected except for two positions now, and that's going to be Secretary of Veteran Affairs and Agriculture Secretary. And I think that's one of the diversity factors, I think, is one of the reasons that he brought in the former lieutenant governor of California, which is a Hispanic American. He's a great farmer from California as a possibility. He looked at the Texas A&M, a former Texas A&M president, which is a Cuban accent, Hispanic. So there may be a Hispanic in the works, but as you mentioned, there are several other people that Trump is looking at. But I think that's what he might be hung up on, his own political correctness situation.
Well, that would be interesting. We'll see whether that plays out. It's it has started to play not so well, I don't know, in rural America. I'd have to think about that one a little bit. I've seen a few media reports, farm broadcasters and agricultural print journalists, although I've seen on Twitter a few farmers that have expressed some concerns that they haven't seen a pick for Secretary of Agriculture. I did make note that this would be the second longest at this point, we believe, length of time that the nominee has not been chosen for Secretary of Agriculture by an incoming president-elect since Henry Wallace was put into place. And that one didn't happen until March 22nd or something along those lines. So we'll see how things pan out, I suppose, over the next several days and weeks, depending on what happens with the president-elect. So let's get back to the subject of hand. I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about wheat, Chuck. There's been a rally there. This has got to be good news, I would think, for corn.
Well, the funds have been laying on the wheat market for a long time and are huge shorts in that market. It looks like, you know, with the dollar going down, that's helped the wheat market. There's a little concern about weather as we go forward. I think we can see the index funds are looking to buy into the wheat market as well as corn. So wheat has been the crop that's been the most burdened for a long time. I think as we go forward, we'll see the wheat market get some relief here, but I don't look at it as a leader. I think with the corn and bean market turning around a bit here and going forward into spring, I think it'll come up. But I just think it's still a struggle until the funds decide to get a lot of their shorts out of there. We're kind of struggling here to get much of any strength with it.
Hey, how is it that wheat, which used to be a leader, more often than not, simply because it is a crop that's consumed directly by human beings, breads and crackers and such, how is it that it got into the position where it seems to be in the back seat as a grain and a leader in the agricultural markets, do you suppose?
Oversupply. I think the world got awash in wheat, and everybody had some. We had 3 or 4 years of tremendously good wheat yields around the world where we were not, you know, there seemed to be a problem somewhere in the world, but I think that we just got the bushels way up there. And along with that, we increased corn and bean yields, and some of the usage went away.
I think the ethanol industry, as it has grown worldwide, corn just has become a more favorite crop to grow. There's more price, you know, profit potential in corn, and wheat's just become almost, I guess if the government has programs on cover crops, Todd, it'd be a good way to get rid of it if they all helped us all plant cover crops across the United States. So it's just a crop that has lost its, you know, real favor. And as Dwayne's point, I mean, it's just can be grown anywhere, and it's a low-cost crop, and it's just, we're oversupplied. I think one point might be China owns a lot of that wheat. So, you know, they tend to hold on and hoard crops at times. So they've got a bunch of it. So let them, they're holding the bag, so to speak, with it.
Well, I think it also might have to do with a lot of the diet changes that may be happening, not only here in the United States, but around the world. Wheat, bread, I think consumption of bread is on the way down. A lot of people are trying to stay away from those carbohydrates. So I think that may be a factor. But yeah, in wheat, The commercial grain trade makes money on wheat because they use a lot of their excess storage to basically earn carrying charges in wheat. So they really don't, nobody really wants to sell it anyway. But we're just, for the most part, at least when I was working in the commercial grain trade, we were always being undercut by somebody. So it was very hard to sell any wheat into the world. You get a little bit here and a little bit there, but for the most part, somebody else would always undercut you.
It's been an interesting commodity. We got any topics that we haven't taken up that maybe we ought to? The one thing I was thinking about is the grain stocks report, which is also due out on Thursday of next week, on the 12th, when USDA releases both the WASDE and the crop production report. Are we concerned about the amount of grain, maybe, Chuck, that livestock has been consuming or potentially not been consuming in the first quarter?
Well, I think the quarterly grain stocks will be a good reflection. Are we really using up more of this crop, whether it be livestock, ethanol, or exports? And that might be the key to getting the positive momentum headed into the end of the month here, is to see we really are using up more of this than we thought we were.
I know that we have more hogs around, and we're expected to that will be built into this marketplace. What about some of the other things, cattle and, more importantly, the poultry numbers?
Well, the bird flu worldwide has been in the news a lot this last week, Todd. So, you know, we might be down. Now, our egg sets are up as far as the U.S., but some of the world numbers on the birds are going to definitely be down. You know, one of the other things we're looking at is, will they use a lot of wheat for feed and cut into the corn usage or not? I doubt they will, but there is that possibility.
Anything around the planet that we should be concerned about other than South America? So what do we know about the wheat and its overwintering in Ukraine, or how Australia is doing at this time?
Well, Ukraine, it was on the news wires today that they could have some winter kill over there. They did not have much snow cover there, and they were concerned about it. And that was the extent of what I saw on the news wires today.
All right, let's get a final word from each of you. I think I'll start with you, Dan Zwicker, this afternoon of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas.
I guess I just wish everybody Happy New Year, and, you know, keep an eye on the markets. They are starting out the week or the year on a positive note. A lot of times when we get a January rally, you'll have a February setback. So if this strength would happen to continue through the month of January, one might want to look toward the end of January for some sale opportunities.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Chuck?
Well, I think we're starting the year out with more optimism than we had last year. You look at the bean price, a lot higher than a year ago. Corn prices seem to be able to get up towards the $4 level on the new crop corn. So a little more optimism. It's going to be another year of picking your battles and trying to make a profit in farming. But I think we're a little more positive this year than we were in 2016.
And finally, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
Well, I'm glad that all the optimism is out there to start with, and I'm along with Dan, as I think as we get some of this optimism and it actually materializes, we need to be pricing some of our new crop grain.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Our guests this week include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.